Gavrilek, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Well, the post is broken. Matthews in it.
Boy, oh boy, wow, wee.
He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
This is the Super Footy Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Super Footy Podcast for Round 17. It's Jay Clark here, joined by two of the finest sports writers in the country. It's John Anderson and Mark Robinson. It has been another big weekend of footy, boys, and we've got a great podcast ahead. We're going to speak to Peter Gordon, of course, who saved the Footscray Football Club, now the Western Bulldogs Football Club, of course. Speak to him about how much peril the Dogs were in back in their day. And also Charlie Cameron, Ando. If he's not one of the best small forwards in the competition, he certainly has to be so dangerous at the moment, of course, and the Lions, one of the most improved of footy teams. Boys, we're going to start with a good and bad and ugly from the weekend. Robert, what was your good?
I'm in love with this player, like a lot of people are, but his name is Hugh McCluggage. He's a glider. He skates over the field. He is a first-round draft pick, as you know, Clarky. He's ranked by Champion Data as the second highest ranked wingman in the competition, which means the All-Australian selectors probably this year won't actually name wingmen. They'll just push their inside midfielders out to the wing. But if they actually named wingman in the All-Australian in that position, Hugh McCluggage will be a leading contender.
Who would you rather, Andrew McGrath or Hugh McCluggage?
Hugh McCluggage.
Whoa.
Who's number one?
Wingman. The number one wingman was Josh Kelly for a while. No doubt,
Mitch
Ricky
Duncan, would
Mitch
be
Duncan, and Ricky Henderson.
Oh,
and
Henderson might be number one.
Yeah. And Brad Hill.
Yep,
they were the four. What was your good, Ando?
Over 50 years ago, I saw a 19-year-old bloke called Royce Hart, who was a centre half forward. When he approached the ball with a fierce attack on the ball, Richmond crowd would go mad, and then turn around, kick his beautiful left foot goal. Going to Marvel Stadium on Saturday night and getting a sense of the crowd when Aaron Norton, who's 19, went near the ball, it's something else. I know you interviewed him earlier in the year. He is the most exciting key position player in the game by some margin at the moment. And he's what brings people to football. And Peter Gordon and his crew would be so delighted that kid's at club. They can build the club around him, Clarky.
There's one man who excites me even more, and I'm Robbo, and that's Nick Natanui. Now, he's probably my favourite person in football. You get to know him a bit off the field, and he's just someone who has that energy you just want to be around. But to see him second game up after his second knee reconstruction, genuinely look like the most influential player on the ground for parts of that West Coast game. And the follow-up effort. So not only is the other ruckman helpless in the hit-out, in the actual ruck, it's then he launches at you like a torpedo. Now, I could not get out of the way quick enough of that man, it's fair to say.
Where was he last year on grand final day, Nick Natanui?
I assume he was at the MCG.
City in the stand. Who was City on either side of him?
Oh, old mate Shepherd and Gaffey.
And who were the best three players for the Eagles on the weekend?
They're a better team, aren't they?
Shepherd, Gaff, Natanui.
Yeah.
None of them played.
Yeah.
No. So they've significantly improved. Mm-hmm. With those three players
And add Tom Hickey. I actually think Simpson will stick with Natanui and Hickey.
Has to, because Nick Nat doesn't have the conditioning.
So even he's got, 7 weeks to go before the final start?
Mm.
Is 7 weeks enough to ask Nick Natanui to go at 95% in the finals? I don't think so. I think Hickey's one of the great stories of the footy as well. But unfortunately for Tom Hickey, he's Anglo-Saxon, 6'8", gangly, awkward, and hasn't got much of a profile, but he's playing some really good football.
When you add young Cameron, you add Liam Ryan and Nick Nat, there's no doubt that West Coast is the most exciting team to watch in the AFL, I think. And after previously worrying last year about their MCG record and not thinking they would turn up in finals, it totally proved me wrong. They've made a mockery out of me.
Keep talking. Give me your bad.
Yeah, it has to be Collingwood. I mean, really, 3 weeks ago, we thought they were set for a genuine tilt at the flag, and the drop-off has been alarming through all parts of the ground. The midfield, obviously, it hasn't lived up to expectation with talent we know there. And Mason Cox is desperately out of form. They come up against West Coast as probably the most informed team in the competition at the moment. I mean, I can't see them winning.
Is there troubles internally?
I don't think so. I think it's easy to read into that. But if there is, it's news to me. What's your bad?
My bad. I've got an interesting bad. My bad's Fremantle. My bad's Ross Lyon. Last 3 weeks, pounded by West Coast lost to Melbourne, lost to Carlton. 4 weeks ago, Jonathan Brown said they were the best team in West Australia. What are those great comments that will come back to haunt you? Probably not as quickly as Jonathan Brown thought it was going to haunt him, but it's back in town. But at the time, when he said it, I think most people would have thought, okay, yeah, fair comment. Fremantle have fallen off the perch.
Yep.
Fallen off the perch. Now, what I think that will do, that will thrust Ross Lyon's name back into the market of who should clubs go for.
I don't think it ever left, Robbo.
Oh, the way he spoke 4 weeks ago, and I thought he was, I thought it was pretty definitive that he wanted to stay, unless he was playing mind games. I thought everything was travelling along rosy, but these last 3 weeks have just absolutely, they've crashed into the wall, and I think the next 7 or 8 weeks will decide whether Ross Lyon coaches there next year.
Adelaide Crows, Clungy.
Oh, when you
play a showdown, and you know it's going to be really physical and counting, that's what those two clubs do to each other, and Port can do that. They showed it against Geelong a few weeks earlier. They turned up, the other side didn't. They'd be embarrassed. Well, they should be embarrassed, some of those Adelaide Crow players. Mm-hmm. And I doubt whether they're going to make any great impact in September.
The first half was pretty good. The second half was just really, really ordinary. There's one player there, and it's been touched on this week, Eddie Betts. What do you do with Eddie Betts? He's a champ, and you'll probably stay in the game, but he's in a form slump.
Hmm. Ugly?
Very ugly. No, jump in. Very.
Oh, good, the bad, the ugly?
No.
I thought you asked, is Eddie Betts ugly? He's ugly form, no doubt.
Who's your ugly, Ando?
Clucky, on a Saturday where we had, for the first time in AFL history, 3 games where the crowd exceeded 50,000 people, which is outstanding crowds. And one of those games was Sydney Essendon, which got 66,000 MCG. That's a big crowd for Sydney Essendon. I mean, you don't expect an interstate side to be able to draw those sort of numbers. Yet the standard of footy at times, it took it, you know, the last quarter of Carlton Melbourne became interesting, sure. But a lot of the other games were just ho-hum affairs. And it does worry me. I don't like criticising the standard of footy. I watch a lot of games, as you two boys do. I want to go to enjoy it and embrace it and love the code. And right now, it's not at its zenith.
Good call, Ando.
I don't know who Sean McKernan jumped into, but yesterday in the Match Review panel, and you were down at AFL offices talking to Michael Christian, and we'll just check on that as we speak. But Sean McKernan ran out for a mark. A Sydney Swans opponent stood there and marked the ball. McKernan jumped in the air, didn't put his hands up, and crashed him straight in the back. And the umpire ran in and said, no 50-metre penalty. Come to Monday, and he gets fined $2,000 by the MRP. The inconsistency from umpiring decisions to MRP reactions annoys the hell out of me. It was a really, really poor effort from McKernan, and it wasn't even worthy of 50 metre penalty, but the MRP guys give us 2K.
Mine's left field. Same game. I didn't like that Zach Merritt came off the field the second half of the second quarter with a headache or a migraine, as the club confirmed to the Herald Sun, I think it was in Monday's paper. And looked, just didn't look great. You know, had that vision issues, was a bit sort of, looked a bit unwell, had a bit of a break over halftime, then went back out there and played in the second half. Now, if that was my son, I reckon if you're getting a headache or a migraine in a game,
you're worried about concussion?
That
wouldn't have been an issue because they would have done the concussion test with him.
But if he was your son and you've watched him fight and fight and fight and he's got an attitude and a personality to play professional AFL sport, there comes a level of combativeness in that person. And if my son come off with a headache, I would say, I wonder what's going on. Okay, if you haven't got concussion, out you get. You're only 22 of you. You don't be sitting on the bench with a headache.
This is
we need you.
Mark, how much more do we know now about concussion than we did 20 years ago?
No, I said if it wasn't concussion.
But it wasn't concussion, Clay.
No, that's right. Hear me out for a second. In 20 years, we've known a lot more about neuroscience and the head and concussion. What are we going to know in 20 years
from now? So we take players off and rest them for having headaches.
Well,
now.
I think if your ability to be out there is compromised in terms of your vision or your awareness or your wellness above the shoulders, that's enough for
but
me.
But
to
what
be,
if it did
to,
it clear up?
To be a concern. Well, obviously, because he went back out there.
Yeah, so to be honest, I understand your concerns.
Yep.
As a parent, there's no doubt. I absolutely understand. But these players, they're different people. They they're combative. They want to get out there. They want to. They want to play. Their whole lives are worked around 2 hours a week.
So would aren't you compromised, Mark?
I think the club did the right thing when he came off and said, "Right, we'll check you. You won't go back on unless we give you the right test." But no, I'm not worried about that.
I'm not saying the club did the wrong thing. Yeah. It just felt awkward for me, and I just worried about him, because if he's having reporting vision issues, can he see the bloke coming to the left of him as he goes for that mark?
But he wouldn't have gone back out there if he couldn't.
Mark, how many players,
Jay,
10 and 20 years ago,
Jay,
how many went out there, "Oh, man, I'm fine. No, I'm all good. Yeah, no, Doc, no, I'm all sweet." Players have told me that they've done that.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, how does that, as if that doesn't still continue?
No, but they'd give them the concussion test. Anyway, it's an interesting point, but I'll still go with the combative nature of the players.
Concussion has changed a little bit, hasn't it, over the journey? What was the bloke in the 1970s who came off? He wasn't much of a player. Was playing full forward in this particular game, came off and he was absolutely stuffed. And the coach said, because he didn't have interchange back in those days, Robert. And he said, "What's his problem?" He said, "He doesn't know who he is." He said, "Well, tell him he's Peter Hudson and send him back on."
That's really interesting. Now, that's a really good topic. When Jordan Lewis was KO'd in, I think, the worst KO incident I've seen on the field, mm-hmm. brave by him, brave. He did not take his eyes off the ball, Jordan, and mm-hmm. he got taken out by Jared Harbour, I think.
Yeah, it was. Yep.
He played the next week, Jordan. Hmm. He played the next week. And I remember.
It's happened a lot.
And I remember our former chief football writer, Mike Sheen, at the time. And you might remember this, Ando. He wrote article after article about this. This is wrong. This is wrong.
Yeah, Mike was really big on it, wasn't he, at the time?
And I think Jordan admitted he wasn't right for about 3 weeks.
Jared Harbrow, who made a mistake. But since then, what he's done for Gold Coast has just been enormous, hasn't it?
Mm. Oh, yeah,
You think he stayed at that club through thick and thin. And he's the only one. He's there from the start. And he deserves some sort of honour named after him by Gold Coast Suns.
We'll talk about Gold Coast in a second. This is the Super Footy Podcast, of course, for TAB. Who are you backing? Jay Clark, John Anderson and Mark Robinson. Wasn't it fascinating, the comments from Chris Judd on Footy Classified, saying that the Blues don't want a coach with training wheels on?
We're pretty clear on the attributes we want from our next coach and which attributes are more of a priority than others. I think I've said publicly it's not really appropriate for me to give a running commentary on where we're up to it, but we're working through it.
Can I put it to you that it'll be an experienced coach, not an unproven one?
Yeah, I think we've said that publicly. We want an experienced coach that can take us to the next level. We don't want someone with training wheels on.
Now, if you were David Teague, fellas, do you think that that counts him out? That's what it feels like
so
to me.
So, David Teague, who do they play in the weekend?
Sydney,
and then they play Gold Coast, I reckon, after that.
Mm-hmm.
So, say there's seven games left. Say he wins every game, and they win it impressively, mm-hmm. and the kids continue to grow. So Sam Walsh on the weekend, who looked like the explosive breakaway player you want him to be. Sorry, Kane Corns, because Kane and I don't agree on that particular one at this stage, but that's what opinions are all about. But if he does that, David Teague, is that not... And he's been in the system a fair while now, David Teague. Mm-hmm. I was surprised at those comments, because I would have thought if you could entice, say it was Paul Roos, as the mentor type situation with David Teague, that to me as a Carlton supporter would be a good fit. I'm looking at a Carlton supporter in the background who's nodding his head in affirmative.
What would David Teague have thought of Chris Judd's comments?
That's the question. What would he have thought?
He hopefully would already know them.
His best chance is David Teague is to ring Paul Roos and say, "Roosie, I know I'm on training wheels, but if you agree to come and be my mentor..."
How do I get these training wheels off?
Yeah, I'm a chance to keep the...
But you wouldn't hope, Robbo, if your director of footy, he would have told you that before he went on to a TV show mm-hmm. and declared it. Is that fair?
Yes.
I would hope that.
I'll have more on this in tomorrow's Herald Sun. I'm writing something about that today.
Read the space tomorrow.
It was really quite a really interesting comment, wasn't it? I'm looking at it and going, right, it sort of means there's only down to about six people if they're going to go with an untried coach.
What show is he on, Chris Judd?
Footy Classified.
Okay. I'm not at that time of night, so I'm not saying I didn't...
Well, when you get up at 5 o'clock in the morning like you do every day, John.
Yeah.
Can we put this in the time capsule? Mark, who do you think's going to be coaching Carlton next year? Just one name.
Michael Voss.
Ando?
Oh, crikey. John Longmire.
Carlton.
There you go. Just left field.
I love
field.
It. Yep.
No, you... that's a brilliant guess, because North are after him, Sydney want him. Carlton are the kind of club that just come in and say, "Would you like to come here?" And it might be enticing.
They've got to get fed income, Carlton. They want a big fish. the only premiership coach who will be available, to my thinking, who's out of contract, is John Longmire. We know that Luke Beveridge is a premiership coach, Damien Hardwick, Chris Scott, they're all contracted. Alistair Clarkson contracted. Adam Simpson contracted. So in terms of premiership coaches, is there someone I've missed there? I don't think
no,
so.
No, there's not.
Okay. You, so he is the person.
UJ?
Brad Scott.
So how's that? We've got, and I honestly believe that we've got three wholehearted answers then. We've got three different answers.
Yep.
So really, we don't know.
We don't know.
We don't know.
And to be fair, I mean, would Carlton know? I'm not entirely sure. But it's great to see him play some attacking football. I mean, I think we all got bored watching the Blues play. They would score 10, 12 goals a game. Now they're scoring up around 100 points. And it's getting the Carlton faithful excited again. This is a serious topic. But should we lock the gates on the Gold Coast Football Club? Do we think that we are pouring champagne down a bath without a plug? Because you put top-end talent up at the footy club and it comes straight back out.
We're talking about how much money, Robert? Over 200
million. Yeah, it's close to 200.
250 million has been poured into that club. Look, once the commitment was made, I think we all accept it was made at the wrong time, in terms of GWS and Gold Coast, they were too close to each other. But there should have been a break for Gold Coast. But Gold Coast, to me, is not going to work in my lifetime. Sorry, Joe. That's, you know, hopefully that's another 25 years. But
I was going to say, that depends on how long you're planning.
Well, exactly right. Yeah, but I don't think it's ever going to work. And right, I admire what Stuart Jew's trying to do. I feel for them because they lose so many good players. They've had a heap of injuries this year. But they're a soulless club from the outside anyway.
They are exactly that. Not inside the club, but they had the opportunity to go there. They're trying to be a football club, and all football clubs are wonderful places. Three options with the Suns. Wind them up now. I don't think the AFL's going to do that. They're going to kick $250 million down. But you're right. They're going to have to need more money. It was an interesting comment. Last time it was suggested that they wind up the Suns. The Suns chief executive came out and says, wind us up. He goes, I wouldn't be surprised if they put a third club in Queensland. Because the AFL is not operating for the now. The AFL is operating for the future and getting a massive stranglehold into Queensland. And AFL football.
They're not. They're committed to the Suns. They'll be committed for the next 10 years to the Suns. It's long term.
Yeah, they're not winding up the Suns.
I'm starting to doubt that. I'm starting to genuinely doubt
that's
that.
That's not the
They theory, are worried. They are worried, though. The commissioner was speaking to someone I know on the weekend. That person told me, which is good to have people who tell you stories, said the AFL are really, really worried about the Gold Coast.
Are they less or more successful than GWS in terms of the crowds they bring in? And the footy
memberships are pretty
memberships
solid.
And footing they have within their community. I can't answer that.
No,
I know they're less successful on the field.
Yeah, they are. 25,000 members for GWS, which they announced recently, which is a pretty good return.
Yep.
25,000 members in the West, and if you've been out there, that's a difficult market. But I don't know if it's as difficult as the Gold Coast market.
I tell you what they do need. That's an extra $1 million, $2 million in the salary cap each year just for retention. That's what could save them, to be honest. A bigger salary cap to keep
greed,
the players up there.
Greed of players can save them.
No, I don't know that it's greed of players. But just
it's greed of money. The players will stay if we'll give you more money.
Even then, it is still difficult. Because just say you are Jack Lukosius, fellas.
Is he re-signed?
No, not
Rankin. Ben King re-signed?
No, Matt, no.
Oh, Isaac Rankin?
No, none of them. I think Rankin will shortly,
yep.
But I'm not too sure about the other two. But just say they're normally third-year AFL players get paid about $400,000. Just say they said he's $600,000. I reckon that's still a tough decision. Like, I don't think that's a fait accompli for any of those players to stay there for $600,000 because they know they can come back here, play on the MCG, etc.
They started in 2011.
Yep.
Jared Harbrow's been there since 2011. Who would be the next longest-serving player?
David Swallow.
Swallow, probably 12 or 13. And then after, I mean, really, that's two blokes. I can't think of any others who've been there for a long time.
Chris Catelli turned up from Brisbane, has been a bit of a stalwart.
Average home crowds for GWS. 11,640 for Gold Coast, 11,685.
So you think the AFL sent those figures out to keep them tight? Again, someone I know, Tom, was at GWS on the weekend and the crowd was 11,000 and they said they must have been counting feet.
Jack Martin's probably their most talented player and I reckon that...
Gone.
I reckon that he leaves.
Gone.
Not great signs, is it really? For the Gold Coast Footy Club, we're going to move on to St Kilda. Speaking of big issues, is Alan Richardson in danger of coaching his last game against Geelong at the weekend? If it is a big loss, fellas, if it is a 10-goal loss down there in Geelong. Will that stamp his papers? Could it be his last?
10-odd years ago, Robbo, I did a story with the then acting president of Melbourne, Don McLarty.
Yep.
You'd remember Don? And rang Don off the record and said, Dean Bailey, how's he travelling as Melbourne coach? And he said, oh, he's okay. He said, he's safe. I think at the time, the chief executive, Cameron Swab, was probably in more trouble than the coach was in Dean Bailey.
He was at that stage.
Dean went down the highway that afternoon. I think it was
to Geelong.
To Geelong. Was it a Sunday? Maybe a Saturday? No, it was a Saturday afternoon. And they lost by, I'm looking at the stats boys around me,
186.
186 points. And
Clarkie covered it.
The next night, Jim Steins went and delivered the news to Dean Bailey. So it changed within 24 hours. Mm. So what I'm getting at there is if St Kilda have a really bad loss to Geelong, and when bad losses can be measured in points, Robbo, they can be measured in effort, because I thought their effort against North Melbourne was okay after quarter time, but the game was done and dusted at quarter time. And that's not what you want.
The problem with St Kilda, a lot of people say, got another honourable loss. Yep. And that's what it was. They actually could have laid down after quarter time, and they didn't. They actually outscored the Kangaroos over the next three quarters. And people say, how much does that give a tick for Richardson or not? Give some sort of tick. But again, it's all about win-losses. It's not all about win-losses, but when you're not winning, you've got to somehow eke out a win. Richo loses by 100 points this week. Richo's a kind of character, or has got the character, to go to the club and say, hey, what do you think? You know, and if he says that, the club will say, see you later. But he's a very honourable man, Richo. Very honourable man. I don't think they'll get blown away by Geelong. I think they fight the Saints. I actually think Richardson will coach out the year.
It was a poor first quarter, fair to say, against North Melbourne.
Or blown away by North Melbourne.
Hobart at the weekend.
So when you were watching the game, both of you two, were you looking at North Melbourne and going, wow, have a look at North Melbourne? Or were you looking at Richmond and St Kilda and looking at the coach's box and go, oh, well, Richard?
That crosses your mind. You can't help but do that. I mean, Alan Richards is one of those blokes. I think back to Bob Rose, who was probably the most respected person in my time in football as a young journalist. Nice guys don't necessarily get done any favours. And Bob Rose, if they did, he'd be a five-time premiership coach at Collingwood. But it didn't happen for
him. He was
a no-time premiership
coach.
Coming, you know, within a point and 4 points and leading by 44 points at half-time and all the rest of it. Alan Richardson is one of the better people in football. Anyone who beats him just loves him.
Yep.
But that you've got to separate yourself from that when making the business decision. And right now, once Simon left Lean, came out and said finals is the expectation, I think his papers were marked from that moment. Yeah.
Rob, I'm a real glass half full man. You know, I like to see the positive in things. So I was having a look at the Kangaroos' performance in that perspective, not looking at the opposition.
So was I. I was thinking, wow, Reece.
Yeah, I just. But Cameron,
you're a bloodthirsty man, aren't you? No, you were looking at Richo, weren't you?
It was joking.
No, you weren't.
Great yarn from Gilbert Gardner today. Nick Larkey, the rising star winner. The next Drew Petrie, great yarn from the man Gilbert. The most fascinating selection decision this weekend, fellas, Mason Cox. Now, the past four times Collingwood has taken on West Coast, they've been smashed in the air by Jeremy McGovern and co, and they need Cox to compete aerially, but his past few weeks have been borderline poor, to be honest. He's well out of form. Robert, at the start of the year, you said that he was borderline top 50
in
the competition.
He was.
After dominating a preliminary final, like few players have over the past 10 years as a key forward. What's happened to this man, and is he? Would you pick him if you were Nathan Buckley this
weekend?
No,
of course I wouldn't pick him. He's been ordinary all year.
Knowing that you got to come up against Barras and McGovern, or are they just going
to... Yeah, but you've got to earn your right to play. You've got to earn your right. And if you're not going to earn your right, you're not playing. I'll put someone else in who's going to be involved more. I'm not going to say he doesn't have a crack. He does have a crack, but he just has a crack in the wrong positions because where the ball is, he ain't, to borrow a Jack Dyerism. He's just not there. And the ball comes in high, he's not under it. So we'll find someone who can get you under it. Sorry, Mason, you're going back. You can play him for 4 weeks and then you can give you another.
Reedy's out with a cut. They've got Brody Mychek, who's a workhorse as it is.
Nothing else is working. Go small.
Do they go small?
Well, that's an option. Because when they sit down and pick their team and say, right, we're going to go again with what we've been doing, hopefully it changes.
Like Port Adelaide did, remember, in the wet.
They're not going to pop it up anyway to Jeremy McGovern. and Shannon Hearn and these boys. Go in with a different plan. No, I wouldn't play Mason Cox.
The different plan, Robbo, could be in an ideal world if you had Tom Langdon and Jeremy Howe, Darcy Moore forward. Yep. Darcy Moore's played a lot of 44. We forget that. But you don't. It's not Buckley doesn't have that luxury with those other two out injured.
So here's the forward line. So Josh Kennedy won't be playing. He's out for a couple. So they put Jack Darling at full forward.
Oscar Allen.
You got Oscar Allen. So they've got the two.
Liam Ryan.
Yeah, but Smalls can take care of them. Can they afford to take Darcy Moore out of the back line? Who they got down there to play tool? They got Roughhead.
Well, they're already missing Langdon and Howe, so it's shorter as it is.
I think it's this Collingwood period that the whole world's looking at. I think it's fantastic because the more scrutiny on all clubs, the better for everyone. Because we love our game. You're under pressure. You're going great. You're under pressure. Brisbane, you're fantastic. I'd like to see Brisbane play Collingwood at the MCG this week and really flip the top four upside down. As it is, Collingwood are playing West Coast. They were there in their worst form since 2017.
The most hostile venue in the country too. There is an intimidating talking to the players who played there. When it's a full house in a big game, that is genuinely intimidating. They do the flashing lights and the loud music. So players
feel lonely out there on the ground. They look around and there's a lot more of them than there is with their team.
Robbo, you had the John Worsfold on your award-winning outstanding program, AFL 360, on Fox Footy, of course. Now, you've been a critic of Woosha, like many people have, and you sat next to him last night with the Bombers on the up. They're alive for a finals.
Oh, they're very much well
for
alive.
For a finals chance, and they're scoring more inside the forward 50, not as reliant on that rebound from half-back, which people say, or the coaches say, is less sustainable in finals football. Are you coming round on the Bombers?
Yes or no? It's not
No, a little bit.
Come on.
Because 2 weeks ago, I was totally off Essendon and totally off John. I'll be really honest. When I was at 360 Studios, and I left the Herald Sun about 7 o'clock and earlier, because I had a pre-record, and I thought to myself, God, what's John going to be like when he walks in? I've written a couple of articles about him last year and this year. The most recent was 3 weeks ago when it was finals where he's not going to be coaching next year. And I thought, I wonder what he's like when I put up my hand out. Seriously, I was thinking this. So he arrived. And
he didn't give you a Mark Latham type handshake. What's a little bit of a twist. Latham shook hands with John Howard the night before the election.
And he twisted.
And pulled him towards him and cost himself, thank God he didn't get in, but it cost himself the...
Thank God he didn't get in.
Well, he wouldn't have been ideal, I don't think, Mark. He's got some good ideas in some areas, but I don't think being Australian Prime Minister was the right guy. Yeah, but John Worsfold...
He was fantastic.
That's him, Robert. He plays it very straight.
He shook my hand and we had a chat about different things, about the club and different players. And
one word to describe him.
An assassin.
That's as a footballer. I'm talking as a coach.
I described him recently as... He is...
Stoic.
He is unflappable.
Yeah, unflappable.
I was thinking of, I'm trying to look up the exact meaning of this.
I'll go, unflappable assassin.
He was brutal.
I'm saying impassive. Yep. Impassive means expressionless, unexpressive, inexpressive, inscrutable, blank, deadpan, straight face, poker face, dispassionate. There's more, but he gives nothing away, does he?
He gives zero away. Because what happens, this is really weird, and tell me if this is weird. My brother's all Barrack for Essendon, right? So it's a big Essendon family. No. They ring me up and say, does he do anything in the coach's box every time
He's not in the coach's box. When he was.
There were
28 others in there on the weekend, but no Worsfold.
Does he do anything? Why can't he just look at the magnets? Just pretend to move them.
No, he's not interested in that.
And I said, no, that's not John. That's not John at all. How's that for a photo? Photo of the year, I reckon, off the field.
John Worsfold
was the Essendon coaching box on the weekend.
He wasn't there. If you were playing and John Worsfold looked at you and he said, I don't think you went quite hard enough, Mark, in that contest, the 7-minute mark of the first quarter on the members' wing, do you think the next time you approached the ball, you would go, seriously?
Yeah,
he doesn't need to say a lot, John Worsfold.
Yeah. Anyway, his last 2 weeks, to come from behind wins. And when your team's struggling and you see that grit in the team, I think it's a positive. Do I think they'll play finals? I don't think so. I don't think he's short of coaching Essendon next year.
Ross the Boss, maybe.
another coach.
But
no, I just think he's assured.
Where are the replacement coaches coming from?
I think Ross Lyon and myself and Jay have been on this on separate media vehicles. We're both thinking that Ross Lyon might be a fit for us.
I don't feel like Fremantle's made a clear decision on giving him that extension yet. And while that's up in the air, to me, Ross Lyon is... the door just might be ajar, the slightest
bit. Who coaches St Kilda next year? Jay?
I've already said Brad Scott, haven't I?
You did? No, Carlton.
Let's ask Peter Gordon whether Luke Beveridge would be available to St Kilda, because Joey Montagna said that he's thrown his name up, and
yes.
He'd be a man I'd go after.
I'll ask him, because you're too close to Joey. So let me ask him, okay?
Okay.
Let's go down to Peter Gordon.
All right. This is the Super Footy Podcast for TAB. Who are you backing?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, the VFL Commission and the boards of the Fitzroy and Footscray football clubs are very pleased to announce today the formation of a new force in VFL football called the Fitzroy Bulldogs.
Now we have Peter Gordon, the Western Bulldogs president, on the line. Of course, such an important figure for this football club. On Sunday, the Western Bulldogs will celebrate 30 years since the Footscray Fight Back. The Fight Back, fellas, which saved the club from a merger, of course, with Fitzroy. And as I said, Peter Gordon, absolutely instrumental to keeping the footy club alive and leading it to the 2016 Premiership. How could we forget? Only a couple of years ago. Peter, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure.
What do you think 30 years ago, mate? How much danger was this football club in with so much history? How close was it to, if not folding, merging with Fitzroy?
I think it was virtually extinct. You know, the grandstand was condemned. The best players were heading off to the Fitzroy Bulldogs, and what the VFL then described as the remnants of the list were being shipped off to the Brisbane Bears and the Sydney Swans, and the entire sort of population of the western suburbs are being told that they had no team going into the future. So it was the bleakest moment in the history of the club. And, you know, these last few weeks have just been so fantastic to sort of reacquaint with people who were instrumental in that fight. You know, people like Terry Wheeler, who drove all night. He was fishing with his son Tim up in New South Wales when he got a call from me saying I'd offer him the job as coach, but there's only one condition. He needed to be there for the rally to accept the position. So he drove all night to do that, and it's probably instrumental in doing what he did. Irene Chatfield, of course, who put her assets and her life on the line, really, to lead up the court case. Dennis Gallimberti, who blew the whistle on the merger. They're all coming along on Sunday for the big game, and certainly hoping that everyone who participated in that really community effort we'll be there too. It'll be a terrific occasion.
Peter, confirm to me your age when I finish this statement. I think it was early 30s. I was in your office last year. There's a front page printout, I think, of the Herald Sun or the Sun, the Herald or the Sun of the Fight Back. Describe your life at that time. How many hours a day were you working to save this football club?
So I lived in Newport, but I was working in my legal office in Footscray, and I'd been running one of the first big what are now known as class actions, and it was over the blue asbestos mine that CSR ran in Western Australia, and I'd been sort of committed to that for the last several years, and was just manoeuvred myself with my colleagues into a position where we could get CSR to agree to pay out the other 200 men who were suffering from asbestosis and asbestos-related cancer, and we'd literally got to a point of agreement with them on the Monday, which was the night of the best and fairest. So I'd had a call from Dennis that he'd had the whisper that this was going to happen, and it was going to be announced, and he was going to preempt the official announcement and sort of rain on the VFL's parade. So I was in Sydney and managed to sort of get a heads of agreement with the various teams of lawyers for CSR and the insurance companies, and I got on the plane that night. I got booked for speeding on the Tullamarine Freeway on my way to the Witten Oval, or the Western Oval as it was back then. Lost my licence for 6 weeks. Lucky that you guys didn't hear about it at the time, because our sponsor at the time was the TAC. I'm sure they would have taken it too kindly to. And then I converted the legal office that I was running at that point into a sort of campaign headquarters for the following 3 weeks. So I officially took 3 weeks leave, and we converted the conference room into the centre where we borrowed coin counters from the bank. The local Commonwealth Bank across the road loaned us their coin counters, and we organised all the logistics for people to come in with the cans and the tins and prepare the money. There was another team working in an office across the corridor who were planning the... we had a Legends game scheduled for the second week of the campaign, and it was a Bulldog-Collingwood game that took place at Skinner Reserve in Sunshine. That raised about 50 grand, and again, one of the untold stories of that is that I think Bernie Quinlan had been retired for a couple of years, but he played in that game and so impressed Terry Wheeler that he wanted to draft him back at the age of about 37 or 38 to play one more season for the Bulldogs. That was going on. It was a pretty hectic time.
How much did it leave a mark on your life?
You know, Rob, it was a period of life where I'd had a bit of success. You know, I look back, I was then president for the next 7 years, and in the course of that next 7 years, I both lost a few cases that I didn't plan to, and also the realities of actually running an AFL club, particularly a smaller Melbourne club in that era, sort of caught up with me as I sort of learned I was fallible a bit. And because we left in 1996, the club was really fortunate that David Smorgon and his group came in and took over with new energy and new money, because, you know, we'd got into a pretty parlous position again by the end of that 7 years. But I took over the reins as president as a 32-year-old with no experience of ever having run a business. I'd been made a partner of Slater and Gordon a week earlier. So I had no experience running a business, and good people around me, and, you know, made a lot of mistakes. But, you know, I guess one thing coming back into the job at the end of 2012 is I felt like I'd had a bit of experience and learned a bit since then. Maybe sort of took a bit more of a tempered view of some things that I maybe in experience maybe make a few mistakes in the first few years. But you know, like, all in all, I think it's a great story. Like, I'm proud of what I did. Made a few blues, but got a few things right. And I think the main thing is we live to fight another day. And when you look at, I mean, I'm out at the Witten Oval now, sort of, and, you know, there must be 500 or 600 kids out here today, and they're meeting their heroes. It's a father-son thing. We've got Tony Liberatore, who was, you know, won the Brownlow Medal, of course, the following year, was on the scrap heap, but for the fight back. And, you know, who knows, but for Terry Wheeler and the fight back, maybe there never would have been that father-son connection that saw, you know, his son Tom playing a key role in the premiership for us in 2016. And Steve Wallace is here today with Mitch Wallace, and Mark Hunter's here today with Lockie. And, you know, those sort of connections, they're just so, so great. And I looked out on the Oval today to where that rally took place, and speaking to the crowd, and you think about, I think we're nudging 45,000 members now. You know, we've got a strong balance sheet. We're really strong financially. We've won a flag. We're leaders in women's football. We've won a women's flag. We've won two VFL flags in the last 5 years. And even stuff like, you know, we now play in a covered stadium from the western side of the city with a roof that holds 50,000 people. The idea that, you know, we'd have all those things going for us when you look back to October 1989, in one sense, it's a dream true. I'm proud of what everyone's done who's worked in the administration, and all of the supporters and members that stuck fat with us through all of those years. They've had plenty of bad times put up with, but hopefully now they've also had quite a few good times and some good times ahead.
Yeah, it's an amazing story, Pete. There's no doubt about that. And through that time, you've had some really, really good coaches and really identifiable coaches, from Terry Wallace, which was a brave move at the time, and Terry almost took it to the ultimate. Then you had Rocket Ead, and then after Rocket, I think Peter Rode, one of your favourite sons, had a go at it. And you now got Luke Beveridge, and, you know, the tie-in of winning the premiership with you and Luke and the club and others, it was so special. And it's funny, 3 years after the premiership, that people are saying, you know, can Luke Beveridge coach? People are saying, oh, how long has he got at the Western Bulldogs? How long do you think Luke Beveridge will coach the Western Bulldogs?
Look, I think that I tend to think of circuit tape like works of art. You know, I may not know much about art, but I know what I like. I reckon you know a good coach when you see one, and Bevo's a good coach. And I think that, you know, what he's achieved at the Bulldogs already entitles him to legend status, and in one sense that presents its own challenges for administration. I mean, you got in him, you know, one of only two premiership coaches in our history, and in Chris Grant, who's our football director, you've got, you know, one of only you know, two or three living legends in our Hall of Fame. It's lucky that for us that they're such quality people. I've said publicly in the past that I think he'll be senior coach of the club for a long, long time, much longer than I'll remain in the job as president. And I'm fully confident of that. It's, you know, of course, it's an interesting environment at the moment because there's a number of other clubs who look like
looking
they'll change
for a
coaches
coach, yeah.
or have already announced changes of coaches this year. So in one sense, it's not a bad market for credentialed coaches, and Bevo was certainly one of them. But, you know, I choose to believe that is what he's already built at the club, and the opportunities that he's got going forward to build on what he's already achieved.
So hang on, Pete. How long is he contracted for?
He's contracted till the end of 2020.
Right. Is this your final year as president?
No, I've been re-elected until the end of 2021.
Right. When will you look at extending or offering an extension to Luke Beveridge?
Yeah, and I've said, I think, to your newspaper just a couple of weeks ago now that I'm very happy to sit down with Bevo at a time that's comfortable for him and me. I've got complete confidence in him. I feel like he's got a measure of confidence in me, and we'll sit down and do it. But I expect that his contract will be extended, and why wouldn't he want to do that? I mean, in the course of this season, we've already, through Sam Power's good work, extended Tim English, Aaron Norton, Caleb Daniel, Josh Dunkley. You know, I think we've got one of the best young lists in the competition, and Bevo's made that list, and he's grown that group. And I think you've seen in the course of this season, and yeah, it's a terrifically competitive environment, the AFL at the moment, isn't it? But I think just in the last 2 weeks, you've seen, we've been through some difficult times. But I think that the benefit of you know, Bevo's skills as senior coach is evident and will be, you know, over the next season. So I'm fully confident that at a time that's comfortable for me and him and for the club, His contract will be extended, but neither of us are fretting on it. And that's the way a good relationship between coach, club, president should be.
And it's for good reason. He will be in demand.
Brilliant, Pete.
Yeah, good on you, Pete. Congratulations on all your work helping save magnificent Western Bulldogs Football Club, and good luck on the weekend, of course.
Thanks, Scott.
Hipwood on the turn on the left. Into the pocket, he channels it. Cameron's got out the back. Good night. Charlie's got another one. Who returns it into the hands of McCluggage. Deep looking at McStay. Marsh with the spoil. Hipwood with the thrust forward. Cameron again. Takes two to stop him. Oh! You can't stop him.
Hey, welcome, Charlie. And first of all, happy birthday for last weekend on the occasion of your 25th.
Thanks, mate. Last Friday, so getting old.
Oh, yeah, really old. Yeah, pretty good way to celebrate with that win over GWS.
Yeah, that was a great win. We knew that GWS is averaging 70 points that ground in their win this year. So, it was a tough road win for us, and a confidence boost that we can play against good sides on the road.
Now, Charlie, I have to say I'm a little bit disappointed with you because you had a chance to add to your goal of the year candidates in the last quarter where you took off on one of those typical Charlie Cameron runs. And at the last moment, I thought he's going to go bang. You must have seen teammate Daniel McStay out of the corner of your eye.
Had a shot from Sydney when I had a few players inside me. And then I was like, oh, I thought Phil Davis was going to like take the line. I thought he was going straight to the goal line, so I just tried to decide that I was going for goals and I just pulled it back. Yeah, so that kick was supposed to go for Lincoln McCarthy because Lincoln McCarthy was on the other side of Dan. He came off all right, so he was happy with it.
Came off all right, yeah. I was waiting for another motorbike celebration like the Freo goal this year.
Nah, I think that will only come out if it's a good goal, but yeah. But I was a bit selfish before that, so yeah, I thought I'd center it, so yeah, all good.
Do you have a favourite goal in your career?
Probably my first goal, or against Geelong in the prelim final. I kicked one of the five goals. Was the one where I took the hanger and then kicked the goal for my fourth. So yeah, that one, or the my first goal for Adelaide, yeah.
And your career is at a big time for you because this weekend you play your 100th game after starting your life at Mount Isa, going to Brisbane at school, then to Perth, Adelaide, and now back to Brisbane. It's been a journey.
Yeah, it's nice. It's been a different one, but I've enjoyed it so far. So, yeah, looking forward to playing my 100th this weekend.
Coming back to Brisbane to play with the Brisbane Lions from Adelaide, was a lot of that getting back to Brisbane because you'd grown up there?
Yeah, I went to boarding school here, so I had all my mates and my family from up here, so it was an easy decision.
And I know when you said you left Adelaide that you were spurred on by what you'd been said to you in the exit meeting, so is that, do you use that type of thing as motivation?
There was some stuff that was said that I said in the press conference a couple of weeks ago, so I used that as motivation. Some of the stuff I thought was said was this morning, but I used that as motivation ever since.
Is that stuff said to you about how to play the game, areas for you to improve in?
I think it was just more around why am I, the move going to Brisbane, how it would affect my footy if I went there. It was this morning that. Almost in there, but it's all good though. I was moved on. I enjoy my career, my footy up here at the moment, so yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to have affected your career at all, I wouldn't have thought. You seem to be very happy, and it must be a really exciting place to be at the moment.
Oh, it's enjoyable. The environment at the footy club is very positive at the moment, and shows, I guess, the way we're playing at the moment. Like I said, it's enjoyable being up here.
What's Chris Fagan like for you, Charlie, as coach?
He's a passionate old fellow, so I get along with him pretty well. And he's been an enjoyable coach for me. I guess he just tells me to go out and play my role and do the stuff I do, as long as it's as simple as brand of footy.
When you were at Adelaide, you had a really close partnership with Eddie Betts, who I know is a great friend to you. It seems like now you and Lincoln McCarthy have a similar type of bond.
Yeah, no, Link's going well. I guess we sort of play the same role, that forward pressure, last one forward, last pressure, and I guess trying to kick goals. He's been huge this year. I guess he got his body right this year, so I guess the way he's playing at the moment is pretty good. So for him, it's just about pressure and I guess making the most of the opportunities. He only had 22 and had 4 goals on the weekend. So, he's been huge this season.
When you're a kid, and I didn't know this until recently reading about you, but in Brisbane, you didn't play a lot of Aussie rules?
Nah, so basically we played. My school played 2 games a year from grade 9 to grade 10, and that's it. And then just got back into rugby union, rugby league at my school and club level. And then, I got a job in the mines after school and moved to WA. Moved to Newman and worked there. And like I said, there was no rugby there, so I just had to play AFL. I got in that year, at the end of the year, and go down and play for some districts. So, I've got the opportunity and I've just made the most of it, I guess.
in order, which is the best game to play, Aussie rules, rugby league, rugby union?
Well, I like my rugby league, so I think rugby league, we need number one, then AFL, then union, so because I've played, I think, 18 years of rugby league, so yeah.
See, Nickham, so you'd have rugby league as number one.
That's why I grew up playing rugby league, so I'm slowly going there. But I just like, you know, watching rugby league. I don't really watch AFL on weekends. I watch most rugby league, so that's what I enjoy.
What position did you play in league?
I played fullback and centre and wing.
Okay, and you played, you couldn't play that where you're in the mines, I suppose. You didn't play anything over there. There was no.
Nah, there was no rugby league, yeah.
Yeah. What was it?
It was different, but yes, all mates that I worked with in the mines played AFL on the weekend, so I just got a bit used to it.
What was it like working in the mines?
Yeah, it was different. I guess coming from school and then getting a job working 6-12 hours a day, 4 days on, 4 days off, so yeah, it was quite tough, but I enjoyed that because I was working with trucks and stuff. I was pretty heavy diesel mechanic, so yeah, I enjoyed that. And then when I moved to Perth, I go to Australia at a Ford dealership as a Perth mechanic, so I like working with cars at that time, so yeah.
Is that what you might do when you leave, when you finish footy?
Yeah, still, I've still got 2 years left in my my apprenticeship to do, so I think that's what I want to do. Yeah, I can do that, but doing a lot of community stuff in Brisbane at the moment, so I quite enjoy that.
I know on Wednesday night you'll be watching the State of Origin and hoping that Queensland wins, Charlie, no doubt.
Yeah, hopefully. Went to the last of the Origin, the one in Brisbane. Oh, that was pretty cool. Yeah, I'm pretty passionate rugby supporter, so I'll be supporting the Queenslanders. So, yeah, it'll be a good game, and I'm looking forward to it.
Would you like State of Origin to be in the AFL?
I guess you want to play against the best. I'd love to do that, but go take it as it goes, I guess. But, yeah, I wouldn't mind playing against the best players.
Who's your favourite teammate at the Brisbane Lions?
I don't know, probably there's about three or four that I get along with. A few boys there, like Archie Smith, Nick Robinson, Ben King, and Tom Thornton, and Cedric Cox is my roommate, so yeah.
What about Luke Hodge? What's it like having an old fella like that playing with you?
Yeah, the old general. No, he's good. He's doing a big help this year over the last 2 years. I guess for the young players, I'm a bit confident that because an older player is teaching them how to play and develop quicker. It's a bit tough when he don't really have much involvement because he plays on the back line. So he comes up and speaks to us. He always teaches a lot of stuff. So yeah, whenever we're not doing that, like at half time, they'll come to us and say, like, the way you got to play the week before that, or a couple like the West Coast game, what's real selfless, and I guess that's the mindset we want to come every week.
Yeah, I see. So, he'd be a great experience for you playing with someone like that. How far, last question, how far do you think the Lions can go this year?
Oh, we've played against some tough teams. We've matched them, I guess the Collingwood and Essendon game was for this point. The way we played against West Coast, you know, there's Adelaide. Who knows? I guess. Like I said, we can't really focus on the end results, but we try and focus on the process, that contested ball, our pressure around the ball. If we bring that every game, we can match it with the best, and we're able to match it with GWS in the weekend, which is a very good side and a tough road win. And obviously this week against Port, it's going to be very tough. So this is what set us up for the season. So yeah, it's going to be, I guess this weekend's going to be a tough game.
will you continue to play with the freedom and joy that you bring to all of us? We love watching you play, and great to chat. Best of luck in your 100th game, Charlie. Thanks very much.
Thank you, mate. Have a great day.
And now we cross to the guru himself, Nick Quinn from TAB. Quinny, thanks for joining us, mate. What's grabbing your fancy from the betting markets this weekend?
Well, Clarkie, after some rogue results on the weekend, the future markets have turned on their head, both in the Brownlow medal and, most importantly, the premiership. Geelong, a $3.50 favourite, despite that loss to the Bulldogs on Saturday night. West Coast has been the market mover. They were $8.50 3 weeks ago. They're now a $4 second elect to go back-to-back, and on Monday there was one bet of 10,000 on them at that quote. The Tigers, they were gone a month ago. They're back in town and now a $7 chance. Well, Collingwood got into $3.50 for the premiership. They're now out to $8. So the market certainly has changed complexion. And Tim Kelly heads the market to go on and win the Brownlow, despite a little bit of a quiet performance on the weekend in the loss to the Dogs. He's at $3.50. Lockie Neal, a $4 second elect. Nat Fyfe at $5. Patrick Cripps, he got into as short as $3.50. He's now a $7 chance. Patrick Dangerfield at $8. And the market mover, the superstar from the Western Bulldogs, Marcus Bontempelli. He's been 17 into 11 in the last fortnight. I reckon you can pencil him for 3 votes against both Port Adelaide and Geelong.
He's been red hot, that's for sure. The Bont, Nick Quinn from TAB, thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much, Clarkie.
On you, Quinny. Well, folks, thanks so much for joining us. That was the Super Footy Podcast for TAB. Who are you backing? We'll see you next week. Bye for now.